Blog Talk Radio.
Will you ignorant nigga please shut the hell up?
He just said what I think he said.
Is this it? This is what I got all those ass whoopings for. I had a dream once. It was a dream that little black boys and little black girls would drink from the river of prosperity, freed from the thirst of oppression. But lo and behold, some four decades later, what have I found but a bunch of trifling, shiftless, good-for-nothing niggas. And I know some of you don't want to hear me say that word. It's the ugliest word in the English language. But that's what I see now. Niggas. And you don't want to be a nigger. Because niggas are living contradictions. Niggas are full of unfulfilled ambitions. Niggas wax and wane. Niggas love to complain. Niggas love to hear themselves talk but hate to explain. Niggas love being another man's judge and jury. Niggas procrastinate until it's time to worry. Niggas love to be late. Niggas hate to hurry. Black Entertainment Television is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Usher, Michael Jackson is not a genre of music. And now I'd like to talk about Soul Plane. I've seen what's around the corner. I've seen what's over the horizon. And I promise you, you niggas have nothing to celebrate. And no, I won't get there with you. I'm going to Canada.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space to exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logic.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. This is the Midweek in Review edition of Afternoon Radio, folks. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. It is August 28th, 2013, the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. So we're going to talk about that. I have to talk about Afropunk, folks. I'm going to talk about that, a skosh. This is a lot to get into, and this is going to be undoubtedly a two-parter going into the Saturday show, The Grindhouse. Let's go to a quick groove, and I do mean very quick because we're going to play this like an MTV Unplugged. We're just going to really just do a lot of talking because it's just a lot to get into. We have an hour. I've got a gym date to complete. I'm still on this program, so it's got to go down like that. So without further ado, this is, in honor of Afropunk, an Afropunk groove. This is Afropunk Room 2012. Room 2012. We'll be right back. For about a minute, let's groove.
Hey, you be the only one handling my shotgun. You need a gas mask, a weapon, and I got one. We got a matching Mercedes, I hope you're ready. This whole plan is about to be as barren as a salmon. Get it. So good to stand good, just got some fingers that lets me know you were prepared for the worst. And I got them candies, this is there with my first love, to let you know I was prepared for your first. Walk it up a 10 times as strong. So promise me this, to meet me in rooms one this way. We stand together and let the whole world burn to hell. Yeah, now if the blood come and the water dries, we're right out on our half order to the bluest sky. Or if the bomb fly, make a real sky, we'll make love in our bum.
Okay, folks. I wasn't kidding. Enough of that. Again, Room 2012, Afro Punk. Folks, this is Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, the Midweek and Review Edition. Speaking of the Captain, Captain, you're needed on the bridge. Let's get to it, sir.
Afro Punk meets Afro Nerd. Afro Nerd meets Afro Punk. Let's get into that.
That's pretty much what it was, Captain. I definitely enjoyed myself. Folks, we're talking about Afro Punk or the Afro Punk Festival. For those who are unfamiliar with the term Afro Punk, it comes from Mr. James Spooner. Mr. Spooner is a filmmaker who had a documentary, I think it's about 10 years old now. And in this documentary, he highlighted this subculture under a subculture. Punk was already considered a subculture, so to speak, but it was a subculture that was predominantly a white one, or one would think. But he started to focus on children, or I should say children, young people of color who were into punk music. And then by extension, black rock, and these kids who were left of center, the mohawks, the earrings, the wild looks, they just went by the beat of a different drummer. And they were not hip-hop heads, distinctly different from hip-hop. And at the time, there might have been a few sprinkles of avant-garde black folk in the punk rock movement, but here we go, more than a decade later, and now we're talking about thousands of people are attending Afro Punk festivals, and it is still predominantly a black function. However, it's also very much a multiracial function. I saw quite a few Asian folk, quite a few folk of Latin descent, quite a few white folks in attendance grooving to Afro Punk. And Afro Punk, actually, I think it means something a bit different than what it initially started out as. They still play rock music, they still play punk music, but it's more about urban alternative. It's more about letting your freak flag fly. Talk about alliteration there. Letting your freak flag fly. Whatever you're into, just do your own thing. And it's a cavalcade. It's something to see. Dare I say, Captain, I don't remember seeing any heavy sets women of color in attendance. Well, I can't say I didn't see any, but they were. You would have to actually make an effort to find an obese woman of color in attendance. I said this before. Natural hairstyles, very much into an artsy fartsy kind of thing. Very bohemian, just a different vibe. A heavy police presence, but no problems, you know, no altercations, no fights. People are just into their own thing. Now, I almost had a conniption on Monday. Almost had a conniption, Captain, because I went to Mediaite.com is slowly becoming a favorite site of mine. To wean me, shouting out Sergio Mims, to wean me away from the lower-tier ghetto-centric blogs, a la MediaTakeout.com and Bossip. This one, the MediaEye provides a very good encapsulation of what's going on media-wise. Obviously, it's MediaEye. Whether it's CNN, Fox, whatever is going on politically in the media on TV. And if you're missing something, you will find it there. Anyway, I go to MediaEye, and they have this big news blast proclaiming that former Secretary of State Colin Powell was in attendance at Afropunk. I said, oh, God. I said, the cultural shift has begun. The cultural shift has begun. I heard it was him. It was Jamie Foxx. It was Ellen DeGeneres grooving with Questlove, Amir Thompson from The Roots. I thought that was the case. I almost lost my mind because I went on Saturday, did not go on Sunday, and I was itching to go on Sunday. But it's a bit of a hassle to go down to downtown Brooklyn somewhat. This has become a real big deal, Captain. A real big – just like the comic book convention, each year it grows exponentially. We're going to have to get into this on Sunday as well because I didn't see Daryl B. there, but I know Daryl B. was there. So I would like to get – pick his brain to get his impressions of Afropunk. But lo and behold, the great Sergio Mims corrected me, and I wanted it to be so. I wanted it to be so. But somehow there was a mix-up. There was a belief that he was going to be at Afropunk, but he's actually at a benefit in the Hamptons. So that's a little bit more believable. Maybe next time. I also heard that His Royal Badness might actually make an appearance at Afropunk. So I had to stay there. Not that I didn't mind it, but I said, okay, I'm not going to leave this park till it closes. If his royal majesty, if his royal majesty were to show up. And he was in New York. He performed in New York, actually, at another spot. And being that he has a Afro coif, he would have fit in for Afropunk, Captain. But that was just a rumor. Will Smith did show up, though. Will Smith was at Afropunk, and I missed that. So I received some joy in that. That is, it is such a distinctly different affair than the stereotypical hip hop thing. So, I have to really give it up for Afropunk. I'll be there for 2014. I would assume that the captain and maybe even Sally B, some of our folk from the inner circle, from the inner sanctum, they're talking. When I came in with my T-shirts, they were like, "Where's my T-shirt?" Okay. You got to be in attendance. That's what the captain said. He's teaching me. You have to be in attendance to get these T-shirts. Captain, your thoughts, and then we're going to move along.
Now, here's the thing. I'm pretty sure the listeners can remember the movie Hoodlum with the great Larry Fishburne. When the gangsters, quote-unquote black gangsters, were up in Harlem doing their hustling, making their money, the white gangsters pretty much left them alone because their attitude was, it's just Harlem pennies. Let them go ahead with that. But once the Harlem pennies went from nickels, then went to quarters, then went to dollars, here come the quote-unquote white gangsters. We've seen this type of thing also in the hip-hop. A lot of hip-hop artists complain today that we never controlled the music or anything like that. Now, with this Afropunk situation, how long before it starts to go pop? Meaning which, the huge, huge, huge deep pockets of these organizations come in and say, okay, you guys went ahead and did your thing. You figured it out. Now let's come in and do it this way now. Let's water it down. We know any time anything goes pop, commercialized, it is the watered down version. You get something else. Now, that's just a question I'm putting out there. And this is something all these Afropunk individuals need to watch and also learn from the past. There needs to be some control by the performers and everyone else who's involved who is black to keep this somewhat grassroots, but you want it to be grassroots where it expands, where it actually keeps its identity and it doesn't turn into something else. That's all I'm saying. It's a Raffle Nerd.
Yeah, it's a fair question, definitely, and I can't lie and say that I haven't thought about this because it is growing, but it seems to be a well-known secret in some way. In other words, we know this Afropunk thing is going on. I saw a fair number of white folk walking around comfortably in Afropunk because you had this is downtown Brooklyn, okay? This is Bohemian Central. So you have a certain educated class, black and white, that are going to be into this thing. So it may be a little different because you're dealing with, again, a different class of individuals. You're dealing with a radical black folk as it is. And this thing seems to be very much an in-house thing. Now, James Spooner, he was in control of Afropunk, but he sold it. And now someone else is in control of the Afropunk function. But I believe that it is still very much a black centered, black-owned property. But the irony, and we're going to go to the next topic, but the irony about this thing, Captain, is that I was reading articles about what happened not too far from Afropunk. At the same time, you had the MTV Music Awards, and some articles were highlighting just how white it was, how much of a cultural appropriation was involved, in, especially in this year's MTV Awards, where everyone, not everyone, but there was, let's say, an 80% white performance thing, but it was white performance kind of sort of mimicking black art. So a great turnaround would be Afropunk, because now you almost have to go that way in order for it to be radical. And people are, let's face it, black culture, black people, everyone multiracially would be looking at black folk to say, okay, what you have next? What's up next? What's coming out from black people now? Mm-hmm. That's what they're waiting for. That's why white folks are there, Captain. That's why white folks were there during the race music period. They were there for blues. They were there for jazz. When they're hanging around, they're saying, okay, what are you black folks going to do next? That's what they're doing. So, logically, you would think that in order for things to be different, for that cultural shift, even musically, white folks are doing the black thing. Turnaround is fair play. Maybe it's time for black folks to do the quote-unquote white thing, even though it's not really a white thing because black folks invented rock and roll. But I digress. Folks, this is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Radio. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We got about 4 minutes remaining, 40 minutes remaining of the show. We'll get to a groove in a moment, but I want to get to another topic. We're going to treat this, speaking of MTV, Captain, we're going to treat this like a unplugged edition where it's not so much music per se, because we just have too much stuff to talk about, and I got to get to the gym as soon as I put down the mic. I'm going to jettison to the gym. The next topic, of course, we're going to have to talk a little bit about the event of the moment, which is the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, which is taking place even as we speak. Our president spoke quite candidly. Of course, you know he's a great orator, giving somewhat of a history lesson as to what happened with the civil rights movement. And this is, well, you know, I don't want to say it's difficult for me to say because we've already taken on that contrarian mantle, and I've become more comfortable in really speaking my mind. The March on Washington, the original March on Washington, August 28th, 1963, I wasn't even an idea then, Captain. I wasn't even an idea. I wasn't. Neither one of us were around. So I can only go by what my parents. Right? You weren't there also, unless you were a spirit. Anyway, growing up post civil rights, because now we're Generation Xers. Anyone born from 1965 to 1980 is a Generation X. Anybody thereafter is Generation Y. And actually, anyone born in the wake of the bombings, the World Trade Center bombings. They are millennials. So now you have millennials, you have Generation Y, and you have Generation X. And as a Generation X person, the civil rights movement was very much in the air. It was, you might not have lived it, but we were the experiment that came in after. After all the fights and the violence and the litigation, the pain and sweat, the tears, the lynchings, we were the first class coming out of the civil rights movement. Our parents would be the folks, the young folks at that time, that were very much the civil rights generation. We are the progenitors of the civil rights, or the progeny, I should say, of the civil rights generation. So we're closer on it. We didn't live it, but we were the experiment coming out of it. You know, as far as busing, if anyone went to school in the 70s and the 80s as a kid, you might have dealt with busing. You dealt with classrooms that were desegregated. Even though desegregation of schools took place between 1954 and 1955 with the Border Topeka case, Thurgood Marshall's case, segregation really did not, as far as the practicality, as far as actually being a working mechanism, did not really go into play until 1970. So a law can be made. You know, when it leaves the courtroom is one thing, but when it actually goes down to the brass tacks, it's to be being a functional device, it really didn't take place until 1970. So anyone born in 1970, or anyone, you know, going to school in 75, 80, 85, you really are the experiment. What happens after desegregation has become the law of the land? So, looking at the first march, you're looking at legends, legendary figures, historical figures. The March on Washington, the original one, just resonates with me because it has so many of my heroes are on that podium, aside from the great Dr. Martin Luther King. Some who did not speak, but just visually. Adam Clayton Powell Jr. was in attendance. Of course, Bayard Rustin, who has become more important now than he was then. Let me rephrase that. As far as a historical figure, Bayard Rustin was a activist, very much a person that was the architect, the actual architect of the March on Washington. But he was a gay man. So gayness in the 60s was not on the come up like it is in 2013. So because of that, he was kind of a background player, and it's only because of our sensibilities today that he gets more kudos now. But it took, again, we're talking about 50 years to be able to talk about Mr. Rustin more comfortably, even though he was the lead architect of the movement. of this particular watch. He was the chief organizer, him as well as A. Philip Randolph, who's also another leading labor union president. I mean, this, you're talking about folks that are in the pantheon of the civil rights movement. So it just meant a lot more. And marching was, you know, marching was really was a great instrument for protest. Now I think we've overused the marching thing. I think it's important that we do pay homage because it is the 50th anniversary of the march. Today is the 50th anniversary. And now we're in the wake of a black presidency. So, you know, you can come full circle with this. But the problem, Captain, is that for as much movement as we've made, there's aspects of what's going on, which is what this show talks about. We know, we talk about nerd culture, we talk about all types of stuff, but we also talk about uncomfortable things when it comes down to black dysfunctionalism. What's going on now with the rampant minstrelsy and the crime, our inability to deal with it, you know, now we have the Trayvon Martin family there front and center representing this full circle thing. I'm not comfortable with them being representative of that. They're likening what happened to Master Martin, young Master Martin, with what happened to Emmett Till. No, not even in the same universe. I'm going to leave it at there because we're going to, this is something that's going to be a part two because I could really get into this more in depth. But I'm just going to say that I respect what's happening. I respect what's happening with the 50th anniversary, but it doesn't resonate with me because I think we're going to have to go to something else. Logistically, technologically, it's time for black folks to kind of move off the marching thing. I think it's important to acknowledge what this march is specifically, for using the march as a form of protest in the 21st century. I'm not so sure if it resonates the same way as it did 50 years ago. Captain, any thoughts? I'm going to go to a groove.
Well, I think what people should walk away with from this anniversary is that you have to do things yourself, man. You just have to do it yourself. We're in a wake where we see individuals doing things for themselves, just getting up and doing things for themselves. The help is not coming. It would be nice, but it's really not coming. So you have to do things for yourself. That's why you see in the black community individuals that do very well at times, that do very well, extremely well. These are the individuals, whether it came from good parenting, or they just decided to get up and do it themselves, the drive, the determination. Even someone such as Puffy, when he was running back and forth, going 3 and 4 hours to be an intern and everything else, that's drive and determination. A lot of you black people do not have that drive and determination. That's how you get anywhere. That's how you get anywhere in the Americas. And we have to push even harder as black people. That's just the way it is. And that's the memo that needs to be going out in wake of the 50th anniversary. That's what needs to be happening. That's what's not being driven home. That's what needs to be driven home. Once you get that memo, then it's like, okay, it's on me now. Nothing's happened. Nothing's coming. You know? They don't care. They don't care about this. They don't care about that. They don't care about anything. Okay, let's go do it. That's what it is. That's all. Back over to you, Seraph on Earth.
Yeah, what you said is very profound and very prescient, Captain. I mean, it is what it is. But that's something that really bothers me is that stick-to-itiveness, that sense of personal responsibility, that sense of fire in the belly, having gumption, even the march for what it was back then, those folks developed ideas, they planned. You know, that's the harrowing aspect of segregation, is that when we lived under apartheid or an apartheid-like state, you had to have a black hospital. You had black sports teams. You had black banks. Now, of course, you know, for those that were extremely successful, those towns and that were extremely successful, they were literally terrorized. We know about Rosewood. We know about North Carolina. I forgot the actual town of North Carolina. You know, there were pockets of black autonomy, thriving black businesses under apartheid in this country, under segregation. So, you know, at some point, I think we threw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, as human beings, you should be able to connect and have interpersonal relationships irrespective of race. I mean, that's just the racial connotation is ridiculous in a modern culture. But at some point, we gave up on some things that we really should not have done. Other ethnicities are able to do both. They're able to pat their heads and rub their stomachs at the same time. You know, the Asian community are able to circulate circulate monies internally multiple times over, and they're still able, and they are still able to navigate in a white society, but they also have a internal mechanism that allows them to thrive as well, and that's the key component that is missing with black folk that we did have. We're not strangers to that, and it was forced upon us. It was forced upon us, and I don't want to think that that's what would be necessary in order for us to do that. I don't want to think that we'd have to be put into a position where we're forced to have to do things for ourselves. But it is what it is. Folks, this is the Midweek Review Edition. We're going to go to a quick groove, and I do mean quick because we got about a little bit under half an hour, and there's just so many topics to get into. After the musical interlude, I want to talk about actually something that Mr. Starks brought to my attention. I was trying to reach out to him. I guess he's in the middle. But this is something he brought to my attention regarding Ebony Magazine. And I guess it dovetails off of the March on Washington with the recent issue having the Martin family, Trayvon Martin's family, on the cover. And actually it's a cover that I believe it's multiple covers with black notables, black celebrities with hoodies on, and obviously in an effort to channel the Martins, to show the world that we are with you. And with Stark's acerbic wit, he says to me, I want to cancel my subscription to Ebony. I want to cancel my subscription to Ebony. And I'm going to try to paraphrase what he was talking about, but I kind of agree with him. I'm a little troubled by, and I don't want anyone to think that I'm trying to make light of the tragedy, because any time a young man dies, especially in that manner, it's a rough road. It is truly tragic, but boy, I could run down a few stories from just the last couple of days that would blow the Martin matter, just blow it away. It would be like a feather off of a duck in comparison. And it's just a day in the hood. It's just a day in the hood. So we're going to go to a quick groove, and when we get back, we're going to talk about this Ebony cover. All right, quickly, this is, let's go with a classic. Rock Box by Run DMC. Oh, about 2 minutes of this. We're going to have to cut it, and then we're going to go to discussing it. We'll be right back.
Oh.
Captain, is it coming up? Nope. Captain,
yeah? Negative. Yes, I'm here.
Oh, yeah? Okay, come
on down. Run, DMT. For you. Fresh.
First of all, we're almost approaching 30 years on that song, 1984, if I'm not mistaken, 83. I think it might actually be 30 years. 83, 84 was when that record came out. And it would fit seamlessly at Afropunk. So it would be interesting to see if these cats could still do this at Afropunk. It would fit in so, and it's, the song is so, it's like, it's when you're talking about a classic record where it doesn't sound dated or tired, really. You know, that's when you know something is the difference with, because hip hop is a difficult genre. It's a difficult, because it's very disposable as it is now. Very disposable in its present form. But this particular song was radical in the sense that you had these cats that were using guitar riffs, using a blatant rock riff. It was truly a underground culture coming above ground at this point. But it's, again, Rock Box, Run DMC, and it's definitely a song that I will put onto this day, Captain, if I take out the vintage vet and I decide to cut the peasants as I drive on the highway. This is my background music. If I ever get a late model Porsche, which is what I would like, this is the type of music that I need to deal with the peasant classes. Of course, I'm half joking. half joking. 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. I'm going to open the lines as we get into this issue that was brought to my attention regarding the latest issue cover of Ebony magazine. I still get Ebony. I still get Jet. I don't know if it carries the same way as it did many years ago. Matter of fact, I collect Ebony magazine. I collect vintage Ebonies. I tried to get the first issue of Ebony, which I believe came out 1945, 1946, and it went for a lot of money. I just couldn't. I would have paid it, but I could not win it. It was on a eBay thing. But I have maybe issue three. I think I have the third or fourth issue of Ebony magazine. And the covers were – even the covers, Captain, you know, Lena Horne, Jackie Robinson was on the cover. I mean, it had a definite
Sammy
middle –
Sammy Davis Jr.
a definite middle-class aesthetic. They were really pushing an agenda back then. Now it's a little sloppy. It's a little sloppy. I'm going to open up the lines. I think our friend from Chi-Town, I think he wants to weigh in. We got to keep it somewhat brief because, the show is – we only got 18 minutes remaining, Captain, and we didn't even get through a third of the show as to what we want to talk about. So let's go to the lines. Serge, is that you? Can you bring him in, Captain? I feel like I'm going a little sluggish right now. My lines are a little sluggish.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you now.
Oh, okay. All right. Since you had to weigh in Ebony, I have to put in my 2 cents, since I am a former employee of the place. And basically what's happening with this cover is that, Ebony is desperately trying to be relevant. It is desperately trying to be relevant. It's, it's getting its ass kicked by Bossip and by everything else. And, readership is down. Nobody reads the website. I mean, and if you ever read, even though this week, believe it or not, they had an article written by Rob Fields about Afropunk, which stunned me, absolutely stunned me. I guarantee you, a few months ago, they never would have put anything about Afropunk on anything. To them, that was like tainted by the devil. Don't touch it. But they actually had an article this week about Rob Fields. We had, with Shadow Neck, we had issues with them. They were stealing our articles, and we had to sick the lawyers on them. The website is struggling. The magazine is struggling. They're doing everything they can to stay relevant, even putting Nene Leakes on the cover, Leakes or whatever her name is. That fat chick with the blonde hair, with a blonde weave. Anything they can do to stay relevant. And so I'm not really surprised about the Trayvon Martin cover. It made people talk about the magazine for the first time in years. That you cannot deny. What they're going to do after that is anybody's guess.
Well, what troubles me about this thing, I don't want to be a sad sack. I don't want to be the hard guy all the time. I wanted to be respectful that this is a 70-year-old that should have had another day. He should have had many days, many years to live. But when you get into it's the phoniness of that cover that bothers me. See, now here's my point. They're being presented as a middle class intact family, and that's just not the case. If you really dig deep into it now, if you go into the research on these people, they are not who they appear to be. Tracy Martin, who is Trayvon's father, has a number of different children with different women. And it looks as if, and this is pretty much how things, this is the standard now, this is the standard in our country, across racially, but it's concentrated in black and brown communities. But it crosses all races now. But it's concentrated in black and brown communities where you have children that are being bounced around by a number of different relatives. They're not being really raised by being raised in a conventional nuclear unit. And it comes off as if his mother, his biological mother, really did not have as much of an influence on this young man as we're led to believe. So now we have his half brother on the cover, who is not the son of Tracy Martin. We have the mother and the mother of Trayvon Martin, and we have the father. All three on this presenting themselves on this cover. Matter of fact, Mr. Starks had told me he was so upset because he said it makes it seem as if Tracy is some IT specialist, that the mother comes across as if she's some kind of librarian or some kind of upwardly mobile person, and the young man is coming off like he's just coming back from a stint at UC Berkeley. When you start getting into a timeline, there's a literal timeline. I don't know if I might put it on my Facebook page. There's a timeline that shows just how many different women that Tracy Martin has had children with between 1990 and the present, and that he was never married to Trayvon's mother. And it comes off, I mean, that's part of the reason why this kid might have had a certain level of aggression that was met by Zimmerman that led to his death. I want people to deconstruct what I just said, because we want to skip as to what happened with Martin getting out of the car to the kid just skipping with Skittles and iced tea, as if the altercation didn't occur. An altercation is an altercation is an altercation. Okay,
you know, but here's the thing. See, this is why I read Bossip. Because, and actually, you should read it too, more regularly, because there are certain things in there you would totally agree with. In terms of Trayvon Martin's mother, I hate to say this, but she's coming more and more off like a phony to me. I think she's overcompensating for the fact that perhaps she was never really in her son's life. As you know, she has recorded a rap album with some Christian rap group. And then there were these posters, these ads for the 50th anniversary march in Washington, in which she's in it. In other words, equating Trayvon Martin with the 50th anniversary, equating him with Emmett Till, which he is not. And Bossop had an article, had a piece about this, and most of the comments from people were attacking her, some of them really viciously. A lot of people are beginning to wake up their eyes and said, wait a minute, something else is going here that has been skimmed over. Yes, he came from a dysfunctional home. A lot of children came from dysfunctional homes. That's not saying that – I am not saying in any way that he deserves what happened to him was deserving or so. But the point about it is, of course, if you want to put forth an agenda, you have to present an image. And the image was – this loving family who lived in this gated community and had these two wonderful sons. When the reality is, of course, it's something different, as always. And talking about the 50th anniversary, can I just say right now, I haven't been watching it simply because when I think about what happened 50 years ago and I think about the caliber of people today who are speaking, like Jesse Jackson, it doesn't really make me interested in watching it.
Well, that's a key component, isn't it? I mean, now, you know,
shouldn't Jesse be visiting his son in prison instead of giving a speech today?
And daughter-in-law.
Well, she goes afterwards. he serves his time, and then she follows him.
Now, when President Obama went into a Cosby-esque cadence, and he threatened to castrate the upcoming, the then senator, almost president. He did that with a hot mic. When someone tells you who they are, believe them. Okay, so he gave you a glimpse as to what he was really working with, and based on that, then you see his son and daughter-in-law. They're in prison for chicanery, for thievery, pseudo illnesses. All this stuff is going on.
Yes, exactly.
And this is supposed to be, or was at one time, the de facto president, black president, the de facto president of black people. So if we look what happens, that is one of the reasons why we are where we are. Look who we followed. Look who we, the media says we followed. Look who we followed. And you want to know, that's why, just like you just said, Serge, I can't take this March on Washington. The March on Washington in 63 had giants.
Right.
I mean, key historical figures were comprised. I mean, it's something that you have to study the March on Washington in school to get an understanding of what it actually meant, the lineage, even before you got to the March on Washington. It would take a semester to just get on, to deal with that event alone. Not so much for this one. All I can say is it's interesting to see the full circle with Dr. King being the keynote speaker, and now we're at the point
you know
where
we
have
what? We had an article in Shadow and Nag today in which we talked about black celebrities back at that time who were speaking out, like Harry Belafonte, like Sidney Poitier, like James Baldwin. You know, and we said, could you name celebrities today who are on that kind of level for the 50th anniversary today? And I must tell you something. From the responses we're getting, people can't come up with some people. Some people are saying Angelina Jolie, huh? Some people said Kerry Washington. Some said George Clooney. You know, most of them are white.
Hold on. We got another call. We only got 8 minutes remaining. I see this is going to be a hot topic. It's going to be a part two for Sunday, obviously. I mean, sorry, for Saturday. Let's go to the phones. I think this is BA, if I'm not mistaken. Okay, can you bring him in, Captain? Everything's sluggish for me right now.
Yes, thank you. Yes, thank you, D. Burt. You got a lot of courage here tonight, I tell you. Yeah, just how many children does Tracy Martin have? I noticed that as well. They were coming out of the woodwork, you know, doing the trial. But let me say this, using your phraseology, during this march today, a lot of people talked about what you would call the lower tier. You know, we got to do more for the poor, this and that, right? Interesting thing is, everybody spoke. Every group was represented on the liberal wing. But the lower tier, no one came up there who was on welfare, who was on Section 8, who was getting WIC, you know? It's amazing to me how we like to talk about the lower tier, but we never want to see them. We never want to hear from them. I just found that very interesting about the march, that they would spend so much time talking about what Dr. King would have done, but they didn't allow that constituency to be represented at the march today. Thank you.
Thank you. Listen, you know, what he says is very important always when BA comes through. It's always very profound, always hitting the target. And, you know, that's the main thing that bothers me, is that we're dealing with the rapid criminality. You're dealing with the representation is just poor. I believe Jamie Foxx spoke. Jamie Foxx said something about himself and Jay-Z, that they have to herald the new civil rights movement. Really? You want these minstrels to herald a movement? I don't think so. I mean, when you think about
Jay-Z's not doing anything. Forget that.
He said he doesn't have to. His mere presence is enough.
Don't forget, didn't he call Harry Belafonte a boy in one of his rap songs?
Well, listen, Harry Belafonte comes from a lineage from Paul Robeson. There's no comparison. See, you had a true educated elite. The true talented 10th were the architects of the civil rights movement. But today we're resting on those laurels. It's more of smoke and mirrors and shadows. We're a shadow of what we once were, and we refuse to deal, like what I talked about with the Martin family. I don't want to take a dump on the Martin family. I don't take joy in dismantling that family, and I don't take joy in this young man having died, although some might construe what I say as being disrespectful. But I have to be honest. I don't like the fact that we're starting some kind of movement, or we want to start a movement based on a lie. I mean, you know, comparing, even Oprah came in. See, everyone's weighing in to get their 5 minutes to move product, really. Serge, you know what I mean? It's really, that's what it boils down to. It's not to say, the place, let's be honest. When Oprah speech is not really coming from this. It's not coming from a place of honesty. Okay, these people were put on the cover of Ebony magazine, and you have Dwayne Wade with his sons, and all these people are on there trying to show some kind of allegiance to that. But they were a baby, a three-year-old infant was shot in the head. I think it's alive. Shot in the head in its crib in Brooklyn by some person. I think they just found who the guy was. But before he was shot, the mother kept the pit bull in the house a few months ago. The baby was bit by the pit bull and had to wear a colostomy bag.
Oh, brother.
Okay? And it breaks your heart, Sergio. And then neighbors said that after he came back from the hospital, he fell down the stairs a couple of times. And then he gets shot in the head. But he's surviving somehow. So when I hear this, what? Trayvon who? Really? Now, they found some miscreant that was drunk that shot this young child. He just shot to be shooting in the project. It's another day. It's another day. No,
you see, as I said
this,
before, you remember I wrote, I said this is nothing more than couch potato activism. People want to pretend that making a speech, marching, being on the cover of Ebony wearing a hoodie, that's couch chair activism. You want to pretend that you're doing something. You want to pretend that you care, but you really don't. It's all just PR. It's publicity. That's all what it is. It's not really doing anything.
And also, we only got about 2 minutes, unfortunately, so it's going to be hot and heavy, folks, I apologize for turning up the Bunsen burner for this show. Because it's going to get even hotter for Saturday. But the bottom line is, if we're not going to deal with this dysfunctionalism, it's all for naught. In 1963, there was hellish circumstances, but not to this degree. You know, and you know, when you think of Emmett Till, who was a true civil rights victim, now we have the audacity to write songs about Emmett Till in jest, in disrespect. See, that kind of thing, you wouldn't even be able to imagine that in 1963.
Or do sex tapes about Harriet Tubman.
Yes. This is going on while we march on Washington. So it makes it crazy to me. And when I say this, I think if it's not for folks like Sergio and B.A. and the captain, we are delusional compared to the rest of the black populace. When I bring up what happened on this Ebony cover, and the foolishness and the phoniness of it, people look at me like I'm an Uncle Tom. I'm just stating the facts. And I want correction so we can actually have a march on Washington that means something. But if we keep on talking this way, heck, the former black president, Jesse Jackson, he's got a daughter-in-law and a son that's in prison right now for chicanery. It means nothing. It's almost a joke. It's almost a joke. You could write a comedy skit on this, Serge. You could write a comedy skit.
And don't
skit
forget
on this.
don't forget that daughter of his, that, you know, out of wedlock daughter, you know.
That
when he
too.
Was going around telling he used to go around making speeches telling young men, don't go around getting women pregnant, you know, that you're not married to, and he was doing the exact same thing.
And he was giving advice to then President Clinton for his tomfoolery. You know, we can talk about it on Saturday. 40 seconds remaining. I'm sorry, folks. I see the phones are lighting up. I didn't mean to turn on the fire. I will reheat you. I will reheat you on Saturday. It's been real.
You got to do a two-hour show.
I will. I wish you heaven, Prince, Saturday, the Grindhouse. It's been real. And everything is sluggish. It is what it is. It's coming up, I think, in a moment. When it gets heavy, the music just doesn't come on the way it wants it to be.
Well, I guess so.
I don't know why it's so sluggish. Racism! No. Wow. Slow as hell. Captain, just put on anything at this point. You have a better sister than I do.
Maybe today.
Oh, it's coming on now. It's coming on now.
Take this beat. I don't mind. Got plenty of others, and they're so fine.
Gilbert, get the keys. You're going to drive, I can't.